Checking back in with Quincy City Council President Nina Liang for an update on what was the last City Council meeting of 2020. Nina, how are you?
I am good. Happy to be rid of 2020.
I think a lot of people are feeling that way. You're not going to be a lot of folks missing it on New Year's Eve, I don't think.
Counting down the days, for sure.
Yeah. So you had two meetings in a row because of the holidays, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How'd it go last night?
It went really well. There were three items on the agenda. The first was, you know, opening it up with a public hearing. Three. We had a public hearing in the Public Works Committee chaired by Ward 6 Councilor Bill Harris about our Mass Electric and Verizon for a utility pole grant of location. And, you know, it was actually really nice. We had a couple of folks come in for the public hearing and talk about some of the concerns that they had specifically around trees as well in the area, and making sure that, you know, the process for trees coming down and going up were really clear to folks. And so Councilor Harris is really eager to make sure that we have an opportunity to present that to the public. And I believe he's going to get something together in the new year to just do a presentation and make sure that folks know, again, what the process is in the city for, you know, again, trees coming down, trees going back up, how do things get reported around that. And so that was really well attended, and I'm really excited that folks were able to join in on that. And then from there, we went right into the honoring of COVID-19 heroes. And last night, for the last meeting of the year, super exciting, Council Mahoney brought QATV in for us to have an opportunity to honor all of you and the work that you've done. And, you know, it's, again, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before this call as well, that, you know, sometimes you don't realize how much you need some of these resources until they're gone, you know, and to be able to have an opportunity to recognize how valuable QATV is while you're here with us and while we're still able to access these resources, I think is so important, right? To pause and take a moment to thank, you know, you and your team for all of the work that you've done across the city. I mean, this is uninterrupted, you know, services that you've brought to the city and to the community, right? And the reporting that you guys have done and the informational sessions that you guys have put out there, that you broadcast on social media, on your websites, on local access television, right? I mean, it's such important information, and especially during these days and this year with what's happened, right? Like, to be able to actually go out and get information is that much more difficult. And for you guys to have so many different platforms that you're accessing to provide such valuable information, I mean, it's an invaluable asset. You know, we couldn't do it without you guys getting the information out there. And, you know, I think back to, you know, again, all of the conversations you had with the health department, you know, getting important information out there, the meetings that you guys have broadcast, you know, between planning board and zoning board, the school committee, the city council, you know, these kinds of conversations, talking about the elections and the census and, you know, my God, the census seems like so long ago too, right? You know, I can go on and on and on. And again, this is a resource that you guys are providing year in and year out, and you've always done, right? But particularly now when it is so, so critical to have access to information, you guys have delivered and made that possible. And so, yeah, we were super, super excited to be able to honor all of you.
Well, I can tell you, we are extremely appreciative of the recognition. Thank you for your kind words. Thanks to Councillor Mahoney for bringing it to the council. And it really was our mission, you know, right when pandemic hit, was how do we keep going? You know, we instantly went, you know, remote when we had to, and our staff is back in the studio now. We're still not open to the public just yet. We just can't do that safely, especially with the numbers going up. But our commitment remains the same. We realize, you know, the importance of this service to the community, and we will continue it. So thank you.
No, thank you. And again, thank you to, you know, your staff, your volunteers, and the whole team at QATV.
Absolutely. It is a team effort for sure. It's not one size fits all here. You know, everybody pitches in equally as well. Relatively light agenda, right? But some pretty important items that you had to discuss last night.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So there, like I said earlier, there were two items on the agenda, but pretty long meeting because it's, again, like you said, really important information that was presented last night. So the first item was an effort brought forth by Councillor Ian Kane over in Ward 3. This has been an effort that he's been working on for years. And so I am super, super grateful to him. I think a number of us in the city are, because he is providing another option for internet services in the city, which, I mean, thank goodness. I don't know if you know this, but every time we broadcast the city council meetings and I run them as the host, I actually have to use the hotspot on my phone, on my personal cellular data, because the connections that we have, unfortunately, in the area are so poor, you know? And so I'm super excited to have this opportunity to have a discussion around moving forward with municipal broadband and having a municipal broadband network. And It was a really lengthy presentation last night, and you know the slides are available. We'll make sure to get that over to you guys so you can post it and share it as well. But this is, you know, the super early, you know, stage of this process. It, you know, by no means just because we had a presentation last night are we going to, you know, go forward tomorrow and be able to provide this service to folks, right? There is a really extensive process to make sure that we are picking the correct model for the city of Quincy. And that was part of the presentation, talking about the different model options that we have, whether or not it's going to be entirely city owned, whether we're just going to own the infrastructure to the sidewalk. And then, you know, as the homeowner or as the subscriber, right, you have a choice of picking different ISP options. And so there's 8 different models that were presented in the packet last night. And in addition to those models and picking which one is best for the city, we also have to think about, you know, the infrastructure itself, right? Do we want to go with the model of putting all of the wiring above ground, or do we want to put it below ground? And, you know, thinking about the cost of that, but also the cost of maintenance and repair, the cost to sustain those. And so, again, that's also a conversation that we need to have with the residents across the city and see what the best option is for the city as well. But overall, it was a really interesting presentation. I'm super, super excited about the options of having access to better internet. You know, one of their goals is to make sure that they're able to provide access to those who don't currently have it for, you know, economic reasons. And, you know, for whatever reason, if they live in a part of the city that is not, you know, densely populated and they just don't have, you know, reliable access, we want to make sure that we're eliminating those issues across the entire city, you know, and especially now with, you know, everyone going remote for the foreseeable future, even if, you know, with this vaccine, people are able to start to get back online. I think that, you know, in all industries, we are seeing that a lot of things can be done remotely now as well, you know, and for the safety of a lot of folks who maybe don't still want to go out in public once the vaccine is out there, you know, it's great that they have the option of continuing to do things remotely. So we need to make sure that we have, you know, that we're able to provide reliable internet access for all families across the city. And this, I think, is an incredibly awesome, awesome solution to that. And again, I'm so excited that Councillor Kane has been working his tail off the last few years to make this possible. So again, you know, we'll make sure that you guys have the presentation that we had received last night and we can share that out to folks. But again, this is going to be a super, super public process. You know, we want to make sure that we are engaged and educated on it, but the community is as well as we go through this learning curve. And so the next steps on this is going to be, you know, making sure that we have a series of community meetings set up, getting the community engaged, making sure that they're asking questions that maybe we didn't ask last night, you know, continuing to learn more about this process, what that looks like moving forward, what it looks like, you know, logistically for the homeowner. And when the bill comes in the mail, you know, what choices do you have for those who only use internet, or maybe use internet and TV, or maybe use internet, TV, and phone, right? Like, how do they combine these services now? And, you know, how does that work as far as, again, when the bill comes and what your options are, and keeping prices down, right? Making sure that we're being competitive for these options as well, I think is an incredible, incredible option. Right now, it's really limited, right? We're kind of stuck with what we've got. And unfortunately, if the rates go up, we got to pay the higher rates, right? And right now, there's talk about putting a cap on the speeds that people can get right now, which is terrifying, right? I mean, if you have a household of folks who are, you know, both parents are working and you have a number of, you know, kids in the home who are doing remote learning at the same time, and then all of a sudden speeds are getting caps, you know? And so now what? Now you're at the mercy of paying for increased, you know, pricing as well. Again, so I mean, to be able to cut through that with some competition with municipal broadband as an option is absolutely remarkable. I'm super, super excited about it.
Was there any discussion as to how it would be paid for? Is it taxpayer money? Is it subscriber money or accommodation? How would that work?
It would be subscriber money. So taxes would not go up to accommodate for this. It would be subscriber funding to pay for it. So essentially, again, you know, you're paying Comcast for a service. You know, you would be paying instead for this other broadband service.
Will that cover the initial infrastructure, you know, installation also, the poles and the wires or whatever is needed for the service?
It should, based off of the proposal that was in front of us, the specifics of the exact dollar amount was not laid out because again, we're so, so early on in the process, you know, but moving forward, there are options for how that can be paid for. But again, we're not going to do that until we know hard costs. And until we know, I think until we know better how many subscribers we think we're going to get out of the gate, you know, and again, none of that is anywhere close to being decided until we engage the community on this.
Okay. One thing I was not aware of until last night's meeting was that Verizon actually had proposed to come to Quincy, but apparently is not going to.
No, and that's been a bit of a battle as well. From my understanding, again, financially just didn't work out. You know, we have to move forward with providing the best resources, yes, but we can't gouge ourselves to pay for that. You know what I mean? We can't, you know, it'd be robbing Peter to pay Paul, right? Like, you're paying to be gouged by Comcast, you're going to be paid, you know, to get be gouged by Verizon, or some other service that's going to come in and, you know, increase the fees and your taxes to pay for the infrastructure. We can't do that. We can't afford it, you know? Yeah. So again, I think this is a great option.
Yeah, well, municipal broadband is not new. I mean, right next door in Braintree, you know, they have their own municipal service in addition to the commercial services. So there is, you know, there's precedent for this.
Mm-hmm. And there is. And then last night when we were looking through the packet that was presented to us, there were some cities and towns listed across the United States that have this as an option as well. I believe there was a city in California that's similarly sized to us. And there was one in Louisiana, one in Colorado. So those three I saw on the list were similarly sized to us. And it broke out what model they decided to go with for their internet options and structure. Again, that doesn't mean that we're going to go with that option just because we're similarly sized as a city. Yep. But it was just helpful to see a breakout of what other cities and towns are doing this right now. Yeah. And doing it successfully.
Yeah. So what's kind of the timeline right now, I guess, Nina, for having meetings about this?
Yeah, so we're hoping by next year we're going to be able to put some meetings together and work with the company that came in and did this. I don't want to get their name wrong. It's called Entry Point. And they're working with us. They're really well-versed in this process, and they're going to work with us to put together a series of community meetings and engage folks so that we can learn more about this process as well. And then, you know, from there, we can put together more information about what we want to see, you know, as residents of this city. And then that will help to inform the package we put forward to get a proposal in to see, again, what the options and what the rates look like.
Okay, that's exciting. I mean, competition, I think most market analysis people would agree is good.
Mm-hmm, 100%. Better than a monopoly. Again, that's going to gouge you and then cut your rates. And I can go on and on venting about them because, again, you know, just to be able to do our council meetings, I have to use my personal hotspot because the service is so awful. So I will not vent too long about that because I feel like I can vent for a while about that.
Okay. We'll let you vent more later.
Yeah, maybe offline. Yeah.
Then, of course, another key critical issue was the LDA, right, for the two remaining parcels at the Hancock lot.
Yes, yes. So the last meeting that we had on that, again, there had to be updated information that was presented to us, and we were able to get that. So we got a clean version of the LDA with some changes that we had wanted to see. Some of my colleagues wanted to see some changes added and made into the document. So that was made and updated. So we had the clean version in front of us last night, and we had a presentation on some of those updates. So just, again, having a clean version from this document that had been worked on for the past however many years and making sure that that was in front of us last night. The biggest concern, I think, and we need to make sure to keep an eye on this, as we always have, you know, for however many years now we've been doing redevelopment in the downtown, is making sure that we are paying deference and respect to the business owners that are there, you know, that exist there. And there were three in particular that, you know, we obviously want to make sure get the respect that's due to them. You know, Napoli's is over there, the V&K Smoke Shop and Patty Berry's, you know, they've been there along with a number of other business owners, you know, in the Quincy Center area, who had been there well before any of this development had happened, right? And we need to make sure that while this is great to see this redevelopment and to see the downtown revives again, you know, and this is something that, you know, we've all been saying for years, right? We can't forget the business owners and the residents and making sure that this sort of revitalization and the benefits that come from that benefit them, you know? And that was, I think, a key point that, you know, was made last night, is that moving forward, yes, this is great. Let's continue to revitalize this area and, you know, beautify this area. That's what we want to see. Yes, we can't forget the folks who've been there, you know, through all of this. We can't forget the folks who've been there, you know, since before any of this beautification started happening, right? They sustained us all these years. They sustained us for decades, right? And so that's something that we can't forget. And again, I think that point was made last night during the meeting as well.
So is the plan to relocate those businesses or at least compensate them fairly? You know, how will that work?
Some combination of both. And the details of that would be between now the owners, LBC, and the business owners themselves. And that has happened with all of the different parcels in that area. And it happens with, you know, any development parcel across the city, is that if, you know, a private owner purchases a property, whether it's private, you know, residential or commercial, and then there's a tenant in that space, right, there needs to be a conversation between those two to come to an agreement that's satisfactory for both, right? And again, that was the sticking point last night, was making sure that this is a process that's done with respect, right? It's whether it's, you know, a landlord purchasing a three-family home, right? And there's been tenants there for forever, and making sure that that's a respectful process. So too does that need to happen here for these small business owners, you know, and especially right now when they've already been dealing with so much, you know, to put this on top of that, again, we need to make sure that it's done in a respectful way.
Yeah. Personally, do you feel confident LBC will treat them fairly?
I do. I think that, you know, they've been in the city for quite a number of years now and have continued to work with other small businesses in the area. And so they have experience. They know the area well. They've gotten to know a lot of small business owners in the city as well as the residents in the city. And so, you know, of course, we always go into things with, you know, cautious optimism, and we need to make sure that we're advocating for the people we need to, which is, again, those small business owners who've been here sustaining the city and our commercial tax base for years, you know? So as, you know, again, it's cautious optimism, right? I have no doubt that LBC would go into it with a respectful process, but we need to make sure that we are also continuing to advocate for that.
Okay, so the LDA was approved, I'm assuming?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's the next step now?
So they have to go through a number of steps before anything actually starts, even though they are on a timeline, which is helpful to know, right? I mean, the timeline is the most important thing. We don't want any properties held hostage, right, for X amount of time where there's so many unknowns. Is it going to get built? Is it not? And there's already so many uncertainties. So to be able to have a hard timeline that was built into the LDA was really helpful to have. But so just to go into this, the next step is they have to get DHCD approval. And then from there, they have to come back and go in front of the planning board and make sure they get all of the details of the project approved through the planning board as well. And so this is the first step in a series of steps that need to happen before anything, you know, can go into the ground. But again, they are on a clock. And so I know that they're going to work diligently to make sure they meet those guidelines.
Okay. Is it still, I know they were planning two separate buildings, a total of 350 residential units. Is that still the preliminary plan?
Mm-hmm, it is. And so the front facing one on Hancock Street, directly facing Hancock Street, would have first floor retail on it. And then the back one, they had mentioned last night that because of the corner, the way it is, that this is the corner that's right across from the courthouse. Mm-hmm. Just the location of it is not as conducive as the Hancock one for first floor retail. So that's something that they're exploring right now too, is maybe only putting first floor retail on the front end so that when folks are, again, you know, walking up and down Hancock Street, they can easily access some of that retail space.
Okay. Did they talk at all about parking for these new buildings and how that would be addressed?
Yep. So there are parking requirements and they do have to fulfill that within the two projects that they have right now. So they're going to be building some parking for both parcels, but they also have a property that they had already built with the previous LDA that came with some parking spaces in the existing Hancock lot, and they don't use all of those spaces. So they're going to combine some of those leftover spaces with the new parking they're going to create for these two parcels.
Okay. So what is the timeline, Nina? When do they hope to get going and have it completed?
I mean, I know by next year, hopefully they would get started on this. That's why they wanted to, again, you know, try to make sure that they're hitting guidelines on, you know, things that they're setting up for themselves as well to move this forward. But, you know, essentially they've got, I think it was nine months, if I'm remembering correctly. There were a couple of different deadlines in there. And so I'd have to go back and double check, but it's a pretty tight timeline that they have to work under to make sure to get things done.
Okay. Well, I mean, as you said, they've been in the city. They've had, you know, developments already. So they have kind of a track record with the city. I'm sure the council felt a little bit more comfortable about that.
Yes. And again, they've had not only a track record of being in the city and working with local business owners and different parcels, but they've actually had a history of, you know, actually building and finishing and completing multiple properties, you know, and that's what we want to see, is somebody that can actually deliver on what they're presenting.
Yes, you've gone down that road before too, where that hasn't happened, right?
Yes, and again, that could be venting done offline, right? But again, that's why those timelines are so important, right? To put into this agreement, because, you know, we don't want folks sitting on properties and holding them hostage, right? Like, if you're going to come and you're going to have this presentation and you want to have this parcel move forward, and you know, you're getting community engagement, and it's something that, you know, is going to beautify the city and benefit the city, we want to see that happen, right? These are tax dollars. This is revenue that we're going to be able to receive. And you can't receive tax dollars. I mean, you can on, you know, a raised property with no building on it, but you certainly get more when you have something sitting on that property, right? And so we want to see those tax dollars realized and come in sooner rather than later. That's not going to happen if you, again, are just sitting on the property.
Yeah. Speaking of money, was $4.8 million, I think, was the final price for both parcels?
Just under $5 million, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
No, that was it. It was the last meeting of the year. Did not think that we would be spending the last meeting of the year virtually. You know, I think that a lot of us had hoped that we'd be back in person by then. A lot of us had hoped back in September that by now, you know, we'd be back in person. But, you know, it just... doing the best we can with it. You know, I think that, again, we all want to be back in person. I think we all miss seeing each other in person and having the public come in and see us in person and engage with us as well. But we just need to keep everyone's safety at mind. You know, you just don't know with the cases that are, you know, rising right now. Again, you just don't know, right? Like if you go and pump gas and, you know, you find out that somebody over there had COVID, and now you have to think, okay, well, did I pump gas that day at that time? And now do I have it? And who do I have to tell? And it's such a snowball effect that happens. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of folks on the council who take care of elderly parents. There's folks on the council who have young children. You know, we need to just be as careful as possible. So as much as it bums us all out, because we'd love to be in person with one another, you know, we can't right now. And I just think that with so many unknowns, you know, I think my colleagues, I have to give them huge kudos. I think they did a phenomenal job in, you know, switching everything remotely and working with their constituents and running these meetings remotely. You know, we had deliberated a number of times this year at different points. You know, do we meet in person? Do we not? You know, what's the best step and what can we do? And, you know, they've worked under all these unknowns as well. And I'm super, super grateful to them for that. You know, I've heard horror stories from some cities and towns about their meetings and, you know, getting Zoom bombed and, you know, things not working well with microphones and all of that. And, you know, we have like tiny hiccups of like, oh, 1 second you're on mute. Okay, now you're not. But I mean, those are so few and far in between. And, you know, in comparison, I think that my colleagues have been able to run just really smooth meetings, you know, and I'm super grateful to them for that. And obviously the folks in the city council office, I mean, they have been day in and day out helping us to actually make that happen. And so from the agendas to setting the agendas to meeting materials and documents and getting them all to us. We could not have functioned this year without them in that office. And so it was, again, a team effort, like you were saying earlier with QATB, right? As you know, it's a team effort. And I'm really grateful for my team, for sure.
That's great. I want to wish you, your colleagues, your family a very happy, healthy holiday season, Nina, and a better new year.
You too. And, you know, I hope you get some time to decompress a little bit these next couple of weeks, and we'll both be fresh and ready to go in January. And most likely, unfortunately, we'll still be meeting, you know, through Zoom, but we'll see. Hopefully 2021 will be better to us.
Absolutely. What is when is the first meeting, council meeting of the new year? Actually, is that right on the 4th?
No, the first regularly scheduled council meeting will be the 11th. We generally set the agenda the week before. And so if we did it on the 4th, the week before, we cut right into, again, the holiday season and folks being away. And we want to make sure that when we're setting the agenda, you know, folks are back and we're able to communicate with our constituents before doing so. So just giving folks a week, you know, to get back into the swing of things.
Okay, great. So we'll catch up on January 12th, 2021, if that's okay.
Yeah, we'll see you then.
All right. Thanks, Nina.
Thank you.